Hawaii Medical Services Association is the largest insurer in the state, covering more than half the population of Hawaii. In April 2016, HMSA made a major operational and strategic decision to move toward more coordinated community-based care. It struck a partnership with Navis to roll out a payment transformation program for primary care providers in which PCPs are rewarded for quality, efficiency, cost-effectiveness, and innovation. In turn, the program aims to reduce administrative burden for physicians. My name is Molly Gamble. I'm Editor-in-Chief of Becker's Hospital Review and Vice President of Editorial at Becker's Healthcare. During this podcast, I caught up with Dr. Stuart Baker, Executive Officer and President Emeritus at Navis, and Dr. Mark Magushi, Executive Vice President, Chief Health Officer, and Chief Medical Officer at HMSA. We talked about the effort they're leading to put patients in the center of care, the results they've seen so far, and the work it takes to strategically align consumers, providers, employers, the government, and the community. Here I kick the conversation off with Dr. Magushi, with Dr. Baker following.
Let's start off by unpacking the term payment transformation. That can mean a lot of different things to different organizations and markets. So what do you mean by payment transformation, and how is HMSA reimbursing primary care physicians in this pilot now?
Okay, so I think to start with understanding what it means, we have to understand what the three pillars of what we were trying to accomplish was. We were basically trying to make sure that we were creating an integrated system that could provide the best patient experience at an affordable, sustainable cost and still provide quality and good outcomes to our member population. So the three basic things that we thought had to happen to do that were: we needed to align everybody's incentives, we needed to create an integrated delivery system, and then we needed to engage the consumer. So in the first place that you And when I say engage, I mean engage them in their own health and well-being. So the place to start is aligning incentives. And I think that's what payment transformation, at the fundamental core, that's what it is. It's taking the way that you pay a provider, which traditionally is fee-for-service, which means that really what you're saying is, what we'd like to do is incentivize you to count how many services you do, and we'll pay you more the more services you do. And we wanted to change that and align it into, we'd like to pay you for what we feel and what you feel and what the member or patient will feel is actually valuable. So what does that mean? It means paying for, in primary care, it means paying for the four components of health, which are, when I'm healthy, keep me healthy, so well-being. When I have an acute illness or I'm sick, make me well. If I have a chronic disease, help me manage that so I can optimize my life during that. And finally, as I reach the end of life, let me live that out as I wish. So how do you pay a primary care doctor so that they take care of all of those things? Because right now, really, when you pay fee-for-service, you're really only paying for the when I'm sick, make me well piece. And so we came up with an alternative way to pay our primary care docs, which goes away from fee-for-service, and pays them a global per member per month to manage their panel of patients. And then we give them bonuses for quality metrics, for impacting total cost of care, and for panel risk so that they're not penalized for taking care of a sicker patient panel. So that's in a nutshell the way our new payment model tries to align incentives with the things that we're trying to get our doctors to pay attention to.
Can we talk too about the market, Dr. Baker? This program was rolled out to primary care physicians in Hawaii, so I'm curious about some of the unique challenges to care delivery in that state. Can you talk about those?
Sure. Hawaii is unique and actually not so unique. So some of its unique parts are its geography. It does have several urban centers, but lots of rural parts to it. There are eight major islands. There is a large element of actually private small practices that are not well distributed. The whole multicultural aspect of Hawaii is kind of a unique piece. One of the challenges of Hawaii is that there's already quite a low medical cost there. So the impetus here is not to take money out of the system so much as to manage the cost trend of increase. There are three basically fairly large health systems. There were initially 25 physician organizations, which are like IPAs, which have now, with HMSA's help, have been consolidated down to 8 or 10. So in many ways, it has some unique features, but this rural-urban piece, the private practice nature of things, the large health systems, makes it really similar to many other places on the mainland. And what we like to say is that it is quite relevant, and it's kind of like the New York, New York song. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, you know. So if you can do this sort of thing in Hawaii, we think a lot of the work that Dr. Mugishi and the team have done is quite transferable.
I'm going to jump down to a question that kind of hinges on the last one about the payment model for primary care physicians. And, you know, I want to talk a bit about how some physicians were initially critical when HMSA and Navis rolled out the pilot in 2016. So I'm hoping that I can understand their concerns and hear them from you, and then understand too how you responded to them, and if you've seen a change in their perceptions over the past couple of years.
Yeah, so I think, you know, any fundamental change to a payment model is not going to be an easy conversation, right? No matter how theoretical it looks like it's a promising idea or anything, it affects someone's livelihood, it affects the way they run their practice, it affects everything. So it's going to be a difficult conversation. I think what helped us a lot, though, is that we really did involve the doctors in the design of this entire program. So it wasn't something that we created in a black box and then on Sunday night we took them all to dinner and said, this is going to start on Monday. You know, what happened was we spent about a year and a half with our Navis colleagues helping us organize these town halls and physician advisory boards and other kinds of things where we took feedback from all of the physicians in terms of the design of the model, in terms of what we're trying to accomplish, in terms of what types of quality measures we would use to measure them, checks and balances in the program. So all of those things were done with a lot of physician input. Then what we did was, instead of then rolling it out to the entire network, we spent a 9-month period piloting it. So we took volunteers, which physician organizations want to be involved in the pilot. So 4 of them agreed. So they were the first ones to roll out. And then we met with them monthly and took their input, like what's working, what's not working. And as that was going on, we actually modified the program as it went out, so that when we finally rolled out the program to the entire network in the beginning of 2017, there had been a year and a half of design work done with the physicians, and then another 9 months of pilot work taking their advice and suggestions and experiences into consideration to modify it.
I think too, it'd be important to add that Mark and his team have really included doctors along the way in many things that HMSA does. So In medical management world, part of HMSA, there's a physician advisory board that includes some of the major strategic physician leaders in Hawaii who get to weigh in and respond to major strategic issues. And there's a physician clinical oversight committee that also gets to weigh in on the detailed clinical care model that Mark and team have put into place. So this engagement idea of doctors and the influence they have, I think, has really helped mitigate this huge change that they were, of course, worried about, appropriately so.
Absolutely, I would imagine so. I mean, that's a lot of time put into, like you said, the design and the implementation of it, and then you started with a small group of volunteers. I guess, what, if anything, of what you learned through that experience surprised you, or what are some lessons that you gained throughout that entire, you know, the groundwork, laying that groundwork and all the time and effort put into getting the program in place. Did anything surprise you, Dr. Mugishi?
No, I think it was, you do expect that it's going to be a lot of, there are going to be challenges, right? It's going to be a lot of work. You're going to get a lot of diverse perspectives that you have to take into account. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, what you find and what you discover is that everybody actually has the same goals in mind. If you want to look at it from the quadruple aim perspective, because that's something that we did learn. So the quadruple aim, in my mind, is the well-known triple aim, you know, which is patient experience, affordability, and those types of usual things that you talk about. But the fourth one is the fact that you must take care of your doctors. You must make sure that they're not burning out, that you're not overburdening them with a administrative responsibilities that impair their ability to take care of patients. And if you do all four of those things, you're actually kind of on the same page, as everyone's on the same page. The discussion then becomes how you do that. And it's not easy, but it's an easier discussion than being philosophically at odds.
I think, too, one of the reasons that we started with primary care doctors, besides the fact that they're kind of the central locus for care and health services, this burnout treadmill problem of having to see lots of patients to generate your income was, in fact, a real-life problem for the primary care doctors in Hawaii. So as Mark says, a new payment system that takes them off that treadmill and allows them to take care of a panel of patients in a new and different way, and then building a clinical and care ecosystem around them of services that they can access also in a defined, connected way, it really makes their lives better as well. So it kind of aligns very nicely.
And that's a great segue to my next question, which is going to be around that ecosystem of care and services you described just now, Dr. Baker. How does the program account for other social determinants of health that might not really reside in the medical arena?
I would say the program itself is facilitative of using an ecosystem of care and health and social services, which is being and is really built throughout the state, especially in certain parts of the state. And so as Mark mentioned before, there are three pillars, and one of these pillars is engaging stakeholders, the community, and then building this interconnected system of care. So such things as all the social service and community organization agencies, governmental and non-governmental, coming together, being connected technologically and communicating and dealing with things like housing, food, transportation, utility, safety, that kind of stuff, employment, mental health, even and substance abuse, connecting those, defragmenting and connecting those things. One thing Mark found and the team found when we went out and spoke to all the primary care doctors, they all believed that social determinants of health were critically important things, but they thought that they had neither the time nor the expertise, based on the previous payment model in part, to tackle those. So they knew how important they were, but there was nothing they could do about them. So building this ecosystem at HMSA is done, and that's part of their MIHIA transformation of building this virtual system of health and healthcare. And then this payment system allows doctors to have the time to refer patients to this secondarily built ecosystem. So it's several things. It's not just a math formula. It's really these three pillars that I think, and engagement, which is that third pillar, that's driven the success of this. Mark, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, as everybody knows, even just things like documenting social determinants of health has been difficult, you know, currently. So getting to the next stage of being able to address them is even harder. So we try and build that into the aligned incentives in our model to make it something that a physician and their office can spend some time in. So they're getting a per member per month rather than office visits. So, you know, members of their office staff can pay attention to what's happening in the home and try and impact care that way by paying attention to those kinds of things. We're asking them to try and collect social determinant data. We're asking them to try and factor it in, and we're asking them to try and help that. And many of our quality measures are, rather than only being traditional HEDIS measures, many of them do address just population-based quality measures.
HMSA, again, was able to truncate the number of quality measures and make them much more relevant and things that the doctors thought were important as well as part of this compared to previous programs that were in place.
I see. So these are the quality measures that, Dr. Mugishi, you described that they had some input on. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. I was just going to say, one of the other things we did was, again, to alleviate some administrative burden, is we made them consistent for all lines of business. So, you know, you didn't have X number of quality measures for your Medicare population and a different set for Medicaid and a different set for commercial. They're all the same. And so they can treat every patient who walks into their office the same way and focus on the same things.
Right. So it sounds like, from what I can gather from both of your experiences, that the intent was there to really start to influence these social determinants. It's just about having a system and some structure in place so these services aren't difficult for the medical community and physicians to access and to refer patients to.
Exactly right. And because of the payment system, a little bit of extra time that you could devote to this sort of thing because your payment was not dependent on how many patients you see that day.
Mm-hmm. So if we can look to results and where the program is now, have you been able to measure some clinical outcomes so far?
Yeah, so we, the pilot group, we were able to take a quick look at how they did in quality, how they did in cost, how they did with patient member satisfaction, and how they did with provider satisfaction. So we kind of studied all of those areas. So first, starting with quality, which is, you know, one of the more important things, obviously. We did find out that the physicians who were in the pilot group in payment transformation did better than their own historical performances in quality measures that were the same, you know, between what we had in our previous pay for quality measures and this program. So they improved relative to themselves, and they also did better than the rest of the network in quality score. So, you know, we were pretty confident that that showed this program did incentivize improved quality. That's one point. In terms of total cost of care, which is very important for sustainability of our healthcare system, obviously, we did find out that all four physician organizations that were part of the pilot all beat underwriting medical trend, which was good. Two of them enough such that they received shared savings. So we required them to beat predicted medical cost trend by more than 2 percentage points in order to take noise out of it. And two out of the four did do that. So they received shared savings bonuses. In terms of member satisfaction, we just saw a huge improvement in member satisfaction scores. So we did a member satisfaction survey prior to the launch of the program, and then we repeated it again after the 9 months, and there was a marked improvement in patients' remarks about whether they felt that they were able to spend enough time with their physician, whether they had access to their doctor, whether they felt that their doctor was up to date in all of the things that were happening with their medical care, and so that was wonderful. And I should also add that, you know, we measured access by asking members in this survey whether or not they could see their doctor within 24 hours of when they thought they really had to, and that score went dramatically up in the payment transformation pilot group. So again, we felt that that was one good measure that access was improved, but also in an objective way, overall average panel size increased with our doctors who are in payment transformation. So because managing a panel, a larger panel is a financial incentive in our program, people grew their panels, which is obviously good for access. And finally, just to let you know that not everything was 100% perfect, we did do provider satisfaction surveys, and that was a mixed bag. So there was a group of providers who thought this was wonderful, that they had more time to practice medicine the way they wanted to, and it gave them more satisfaction in their careers, and another group who thought that, you know, this was hard, that change was hard, that they're already burdened with a lot of work and forcing them to change was a difficult thing. Interestingly, this was pretty well segregated by the groups that were doing better and were getting more support from their physician organizations are the ones that had a better provider experience. So we've been using that as kind of a talking point and educational tool to get physician organizations to understand what a huge role they can play in physician and provider satisfaction.
You know, Dr. Baker, I'm not sure if this is a question you can speak to, but when Dr. Mugiishi was talking about the provider satisfaction surveys that came back, he noticed a distinction between the two groups were getting a bit more support from their physician organizations, and they reported higher satisfaction, and those that did not report as high of satisfaction maybe didn't receive as much support. I was curious if we could dig into what that support looked like from the organizations, just so listeners might be able to get some takeaways on how they can do the same for their own physicians.
Yeah, so I guess it's multiple levels. So there is a bell-shaped curve of performance of those now remaining 10 physician organizations, and some really have built better infrastructure that educates the doctors, that connects them better to their care managers, and that helps them interpret the data that they get back.
So great. Let me ask you then, Dr. Baker, what has surprised you most, either about the pilot or the program at large so far?
Just how well it's gone, frankly. I mean, and I think that reflects preparation. So in addition to the physician engagement that we described earlier, we did a tremendous amount of research across the country, actually across the world, as to what's worked in terms of payment. We engaged some of the leading behavioral economists. We had two blue ribbon panels that all the doctors knew were meeting. So some previous CMS directors, some foundation directors, people who are very interested in this. We included employers, the health system executives, other social service agencies. So there was a groundswell of involvement that was community-wide that I think gave this real credibility, that it was not some cockamamie insurance company's idea of what might be better. This was, the question was for all stakeholders and constituents, what's the best thing we can do next to improve the way we pay providers? So I think the preparation, the piloting, the inclusion of doctors as well, the reporting out of results, this ecosystem and the IT infrastructure that makes it really easy for doctors to see how they're doing day to day and what they have to do better. I think it's that operating system of things that made it go well. And I, as I say, that's kind of my biggest surprise. And there were some political things, some of the physician organization, not that those POs, but like the Academy of Family Practice or Pediatrics, they had certain issues and they were unhappy and worried about the change, which was not surprising. One thing that came as a result of that is immunizations were excluded from this because the vaccine, the prices of those vary so much and they're very expensive. So that's kind of off to the side. So people saw that the input they had was acted on, if it was reasonable. So to get that kind of magnitude of result in short term, to me, was positively surprising.
My thanks to Dr. Baker and Dr. Mugiishi for taking the time to speak with me about this unique program in Hawaii. And my thanks to you for listening to this podcast. To learn more about the special work NAVIS and Hawaii Medical Service Association are doing in Hawaii, please visit www.navishealthcare.com/Hawaii-transformation. If you have any feedback on this program or requests for future podcast topics, please email me at mgamble@beckershealthcare.com. And please make sure to regularly visit Becker's Hospital Review at www.beckershospitalreview.com for the latest business, legal, and clinical news and guidance for hospitals and health systems.